You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. Today's podcast is about property analysis. And what I want to do is take you through this analysis through the lens of our homestead. Our homestead is called Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through the analysis of our property and hope that you will be able to gain from it if you're looking for a property yourself or if you just want to analyze your own property. But before we get into our main segment, I will discuss a current topic from a Christian worldview. This segment is brought to you by Resilient Property Analysis and Design. Resilient Property Analysis and Design is a company based in northern Idaho that conducts analysis and design on properties, making your property resilient and helping you towards self-sufficiency. We look at all aspects of property to include energy, water, access, structures, food production, and the like. You can find us at resilientproperty.com. The topic we're going to talk about today is that of the sanctity of life. And I want to do that by discussing this article with you. And it might seem a little strange at first because it's about animal cruelty. So in Reuters, they just recently published this article about animal cruelty and the law that was put into effect that basically elevated animal cruelty as a crime. Which is not a bad thing in and of itself, but I want to use this to talk about this. The article states, young people who torture and kill animals are prone to violence against people later in life if it goes unchecked. A new federal category for animal cruelty crimes will help root out these pet abusers before their behavior worsens and give a boost to prosecutions. All right, now, this law, like I said, elevated animal cruelty to a group A felony. Okay, so basically I put it alongside, not in the same manner as far as punishments are concerned, but along the same way as homicide, arson, and assault, etc. Now, what I really want to talk about is this idea of elevating animal cruelty and how it relates to that of human life. Now, I have no issue with raising animal cruelty to that level, because it's wrong. It's flat out wrong. And from a Christian perspective, we should treat animals well. We should be wise stewards of them because we honor and worship the Creator. And that is why. And I want to talk about this moral confusion, what Alan Moeller calls moral anarchy, since we diminish life in other ways. So for example, while not talking about abortion in general, I'm going to talk about a specific population that is highly aborted, and that is those babies in the womb that are diagnosed, if you will, with Down syndrome. Over 90% of them are aborted. And I have to tell you, as a father of a child with Down syndrome, this saddens me that our culture looks at them less than even many animals. Okay, so the sanctity of life is definitely a biblical issue. And it is a cultural issue that we must address. So, you know, the Bible is very clear in this. We are made in the image of God, and that includes someone born with Down syndrome. We were knit together in our mother's womb. All life has inherent worth, inherent value, and inherent dignity. And that is how we should view it. That concludes today's current events topic. Now let's move on to our main segment, property analysis. And I want to talk about property analysis through the lens of using our property here in northern Idaho. And so I want to walk you through a few thoughts on property analysis. And this will certainly help if you are looking for property or even analyzing the property that you have now. And it doesn't matter if it's a postage stamp, 1/10 of an acre in an urban area to a 100-acre homestead out in the middle of nowhere. So I want to walk through that with you. Some of the things that we were thinking about, and as we've sat down and thought through our property and done an analysis and design, which we will get to in a later podcast. One of the first things we did is we sat down and we wanted to come up with what are some objectives for our property. And you could look at any property in this manner. And of course, you'd come up with your own goals and objectives for the property. Now, for us, so we came up with a few kind of guiding principles that helped us in design. But again, today we're talking about more analysis. So for us, we wish to honor God through our stewardship of His creation. So that is one thing that we want to do, and that's how we approach even our property. So we look through that worldview lens. Secondly, we desired our property to be self-sufficient to the max extent possible for up to 20 people. Okay, so this gets into a lot of different discussion items, whether it be intentional communities or perhaps extended family coming to live here on a inside of a guest home or something to that effect, or even if it's just temporary, whether the it becomes a necessity due to whatever is happening in the world, or if it's by design. So that is one of our goals. Now, I want to expand a little bit on self-sufficient. Okay, what I don't mean by self-sufficient is that we absolutely will not take anything from outside. No inputs, no extra bringing anything in from the outside, that we do everything ourselves on this property alone. That's not what I mean by self-sufficient. Okay, self-sufficient in my mind implies that of community, which is a will be a theme on this podcast. So community is important to us. So it could be us and our neighbors able to help each other trade. Maybe I'm growing something that does really well in my microclimate here, and my neighbor, they can't grow it so well, but they have other things that are growing well on their property, and so we trade and help each other out in that manner. That's self-sufficiency. If you can develop community, you'd be well on your way towards self-sufficiency. By the way, that's also probably the number one preparedness principle that we live by, and that's developing community, because the thought that you're going to do it all alone is just not feasible. Okay, a third principle that we have for this property or goal is that we want to train others towards self-sufficiency. Okay, and that's part of what this podcast is about. Part of what we hope to do in the future on the property is we run workshops or courses and things like that. A fourth principle for us is to provide multi-generational livelihood through the property. Okay, so what I mean by that is that my kids would have the opportunity, if they so desire, to develop something from this land so that they could start their own business and things like that, because we really harp on entrepreneurship as the way of the future. Okay, so this multi-generational livelihood. For those of you that are familiar with Joel Salatin, he calls them these little enterprises fiefdoms. Okay, and I like that, and so that's our hope for our children, that they would develop interests according to their abilities, talents, and that they would develop businesses through this. And then lastly, that it would be a demonstration site for multiple permaculture principles and concepts. And by the way, if you are into preparedness, probably no better overall methodology than permaculture with regards to developing property as far as sustainability and long-term sustainability. Okay, so those are basically the principles, and that's important as you look at property, whether you're searching for it or you are looking at your own property, is that you sit down and you think about what is it that I hope to achieve. Okay, so that then we come to the actual analysis part of the property. And so it's important to look at where is your property located, okay, and establishing its climate. It's going to tell you what grows there and things like that. All right, so the first thing is, how far is your property from the ocean? And this will have great impacts. The ocean itself is a mod has a moderating effect on property, and therefore for example, you won't get large temperature swings if the closer you are to the ocean. Now, located here in northern Idaho, we are approximately 330 miles from the Pacific Ocean, and so we're quite a ways inland from the Pacific, and therefore we do have quite a bit of temperature swings and those types of things. Our property is considered to be a cool to cold, temperate climate. It's hot and dry in the summer. Now, that's relatively speaking. It's not super hot, but we certainly get some hot days for sure, and cold and wet in the winter. All right, now you got to look at elevation of your property. This is very important as well. Are you at sea level? Are you at 7,000 feet? In like for example, in Colorado Springs, approximately 7,000 feet, or Flagstaff, Arizona, approximately 7,000 feet. That's going to have a dramatic impact, and of what you're able to do with that property. And that's not all bad. It's just something that you have to keep in mind. On our property here, again, 40 acres, and it's pretty much 400 yards square. That's how the layout of this property is. Our highest point on the property is 2,800 feet MSL, and the lowest is 2,550 feet. So that's kind of the swing. So we have some slope, and in certain areas it's fairly steep, and in other areas it's fairly shallow as far as slope is concerned. We generally live on an east facing slope, and the prevailing winds in the summer here are south southwest, and in the winter north northeast. Of course, that's very generalized, but tends to be accurate. If you break out your property according to the some of the major, call it classification systems, we come out on the Holdridge Life Zone classification, if you're familiar with that. And that is a cool, temperate, moist forest under the Koppen-Geiger classification, if you're familiar with that. And in fact, I'll put a link in the show notes to that. We are big D, little S, little B. And what that stands for is the big D is humid continental climate. The small S is for dry summers, which we definitely have here. And the small B is for you consider just on the edge of between warm and hot summers. Okay, so the average temperatures here during the summer are 70 to 82 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, this just last summer here, we had several days that were 100 degrees Fahrenheit, but again, this is average summer temps. Okay, and finally, for classification, the USDA Plant Hardiness Zone. We are, again, right on the edge between 6A and 6B. And if you are familiar with that, 6A and the USDA Plant Hardiness Zone is basically derived from what are the low temperatures for your climate. And that's going to obviously impact what you can plant. So, 6A, if you're talking temperature wise is, you know, -5 to -10 degrees. Now that's extreme. That's not the average lows here for sure. But it kind of shows you that kind of the extreme edge. 6B is 0 to -5 degrees. And so while we will maybe on the extremes hit that here occasionally, but it's just something that we need to take into account as we develop our crops and guilds and what we can grow here. Okay, so another thing, an important thing when doing property analysis for an area is to look at, you know, average rainfall, average snowfall, average highs and lows as far as temperatures are concerned. Okay, and like I said, that will impact what you can grow, what you can irrigate, things like that. So the average rainfall here in northern Idaho for our particular region is 32 inches. Okay, that's not an extreme amount of rain, but it's also not very little as well. So if we manage it well, then it's certainly something we can work with, because water is of primary importance. When doing a property analysis, when looking for property, probably the first thing you need to consider is water. Okay, does it have a really good water source? Is the land hydrated, or can it be hydrated? Are you able to get to enough water, especially if you want to make your property productive? Average snowfall here in this area is 70 inches, and we live up a fairly steep gravel road, well off the beaten path. So it's definitely something to consider. And as I talk here in a little while on some of the errors that were conducted when this property was put in, it's definitely something that you need to consider as far as access and how well that road is maintained and how hard is it to maintain. All right, so for this region, the record high for this region, all the way up to 104 degrees. Now, all this is over about the last 20 to 30 years. And the record low is negative 37 degrees. Again, that is a serious outlier, both of those, for this region. So, like I said, 32 inches of rain, 70 inches of snow, and fairly moderate climate here. The average wind speeds here, another analysis tool that you can use, is fairly low. Okay, so when especially evaluating for alternative energy, you need to look at this. Not that you can't use wind sources here, you can. It just, for this region, it is a little bit below average, a little bit less than ideal. Certainly can be used, but not ideal. And we are in amongst a significant forest here, so that probably wouldn't work out too well for us if we're trying to generate a lot of electricity via wind. Okay, we certainly have plans for things like water wheels and a windmill that can pump water, things like that. Next thing, when it comes to property analysis, is if you get a hold of a really good contour map, that's ideal. That's what you want to do, and you check with your county. They might have existing contour maps for an architectural type of contour map, something less than even better than a 1 in 25,000 type map where it's 5 meter. You need something better than that. Now, our area, which is fairly slope, that actually works out well for us. Even a 1 in 50,000 map with 5 meter contour is very helpful. So you want to definitely map out the highest point on your property and the lowest point. And things like the lowest point of the highest boundary on your property, things like that. So you want to it gets into being able to capture a water as high as possible on your property. If that is a potential course of action for you, and that will allow you to gravity feed water, which is of course the best method, as opposed to requiring energy inputs, things like that. So you do this analysis on your property, you look at the highest, the lowest, map out your contours. Ideally, you'd go through, get a really good contour map to be able to do that. Take a look at the existing water on the property. Is it on a well? Are you on city water? Do you have an annual creek or river on your property? Do you have water rights for that? And do you have any seasonal creeks that may go through the property? And is there any potential springs? All these things need to be considered when looking at property. Next, so we've talked about the water, the access, the type of climate, taking a look at the existing structures on the property, what type of shape they're in. Were they designed to make sense? In other words, were they designed to take advantage of the winter sun, for example? Are they passive solar or not? Or even any outbuildings, is there any potential to put solar panels on those outbuildings, even if it was just for things like minor lighting and maybe a small heating element if you're trying to keep water from freezing, things like that. But all of these things are extremely important. So I'll just share with you a couple of the type one errors that are associated with my property and the structures. They put the garage on the south side of the home, which would have been a great place to capture some of that winter sun, whether it be from a glass house or even just some windows on the home itself. Access, like I said, I talked about that road. It's not particularly on a ridge, so it will take some maintenance to maintain that road. And it'll be challenging, but not doable. It's not terrible, but it wasn't ideal. It was not set up with that in mind. It was really set up, quite frankly, for the view, and with the fact that we have cheap energy, that's really how this property was designed. And there's definitely on the south side a lot of coniferous trees. Now that I hope to thin over time, replace them with deciduous trees, so we get that, still get that shading, some shading in summer, but that a lot more sunlight would be able to come through in winter. Again, moving on from that, the next thing that I would look at with a property is slope. So you do a slope analysis on the property, a great contour map will definitely help with this, and it's actually required. And then walking the property itself, understanding where your shallow slope and your steep slopes are located. And the analysis that I've done on my property is there are several areas where it's very shallow, 5 degrees, 8 degrees, but there's also areas on my property that's very steep. 27 degrees slope is pretty much the steepest I've found. On this property, we have an annual stream. We also have a seasonal stream that I'm pretty sure comes from a spring that I hope to develop over time. We'll see. There's no water storage to speak of on this property. Eventually plan on putting in ponds and swales and water catchment, and cisterns, things like that. So that slope is important. I hope to be able to take advantage of some of the gravity-fed energy. And then, again, like I've mentioned somewhat here, is doing a sector analysis on your property, looking at the structures as maybe the central point, seeing where the sun's going to come in, both in the summertime and the wintertime. And a great way to do that is just take a look at the summer solstice and winter solstice data that's out there that's real easy to find. And it takes a look at how many hours a day of sunlight are you getting, at what angles are they coming up and how high above the horizon. All these are very helpful for analysis. And that pretty much covers a good framework for the analysis of a property. So I'm so glad you were with us today, and I hope this was helpful to you. Please visit us at the website, CourageousLifePodcast.com. Contact us with any questions or comments or concerns. So, Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.